the show, guys.
That's how you start the show.
Well, that's how the show's starting this week, guys. Welcome to Game of Thrones. This is a Game of Thrones podcast. We are in week four of said Game of Thrones podcast, which is called Game of Owns. I'm your host again for 2 weeks in a row. For some reason, they threw me under the wagon wheels with the chariot blades for this one. My name is Zach Louis.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Selena Wilkin from Hypebull.com.
And I'm Terrence Pinkston from GameOfOwns.com.
I'm Zach Louis from Planet Earth. How are you all today? Hey, Mike, I have a quick question before we go into the show. Tannenbaum, are you kin to the ones from the popular Wes Anderson film that was extra indie, much like you are yourself, the Royal Tannenbaums? Are you kin to them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's yeah? why I'm able to podcast from this huge mansion in upstate New York.
Well, that's weird because before we started the show, you were messaging me privately and you were like, dude, I can't host the call. My internet is shitty. So I'm wondering why you guys have such a bad connection if you have so much money.
Well, we're so far away from everybody else that the internet, you know, it's questionable. It takes a truck like 5 hours just to get out to our place from the main city.
Right. So you're blaming it on your geographic location.
Yeah,
is what
pretty
you're saying.
Much.
Oh, that makes sense. How are you guys doing? How's everyone? And when I say everyone, I'm just speaking about Selena in particular. Because yeah. we know how Mike is, and I'm about to get to how Eric and Terrence are. How are you, Selena?
I'm great. You know, I just absolutely love being up in the middle of the night recording these shows. So
what time is it there right now?
It's 2:30 in the morning, so you can expect lots of great and honest opinion because my filter died about an hour ago.
Oh, that's perfect.
So.
That is wonderful.
Unrated.
We broke your 2 a.m. cherry. All of us have recorded a podcast around that time before.
Oh, yes. It has happened once or twice, a few times, I assume. Speaking of podcasts and other podcasts, how are you, Eric and Terrence? How have you been this weekend?
Just kind of chilling. I don't know. What do we do over the weekend, Terrence? Nothing too interesting, right?
Nothing too exciting. Last night was really exciting.
Comparatively speaking to the rest of the weekend, right?
Last night, dude, we started Mario 64 from the beginning, and we have 96 stars and counting right now.
Holy shit.
Prior to bed. Man, we got to the clock level. We got some secret stars in there. All three switch caps. We were rocking through. We were powering through that game. And, we're back in Chicago after a weekend that was awesome. We spent it in St. Louis with none other than this show's host, Zach. And we had a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a blast.
It was a lot of fun. My other podcast edition had our first ever live show celebrating our year anniversary. Can I get a small little round of applause for my other goo hosts? Just a tiny one.
Yeah, that, you won't confuse one. That with the clapping we did at the end of the beginning.
Oh, no, not if Micah didn't do this again. I actually made fun of you when we were recording edition, like the intro for the episode earlier today. I was like, dudes, you'll never get at this. Micah, he claps like a fish from Finding Nemo. You'll never guess. Anyway,
I was going to ask you if I clap. Can I clap more than once now, though? Or is that prohibited also?
It's prohibited only when I ask because it helps sync the audio, Micah. You know this.
No, I'm saying now, though, when you're saying, can I get a round of applause? Can I clap more than once or do I have to just limit it to one clap?
Go ahead and clap, Micah. There you go. Slow clap. That's great. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. I'll link up the episode of that podcast in the show notes. But it was good. You guys might like it. I guess we could kind of meander to the place that we were supposed to meander. What happened this week, everybody? Don't all shout at once.
Tyrion got imp slapped.
Oh, shit.
Actually, twice. He got physically pushed over by his sister.
Yeah.
And then... That lady who was spending his company with kind of denied the role that he had set for her.
You guys are recording together. You're both north of the wall. Am I correct?
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know. I might be north. I'm on the other side of the wall. And by that, I mean I'm in my stairwell.
I'm in Skullstorm right now. Skullstone.
Skullstone, not Dragonstone like every other fantasy
Skullstone.
Genre.
Skullstone, yeah.
This episode, every single scene, there was like an important moment, a heart-to-heart. And you really got this huge amount of humanity coming from everybody, all sides. There were these characters that you didn't know were sympathetic, would have these moments with other characters. And like, the Grand Master didn't kill Jon Snow for defying, you know, and getting them in trouble. Man, I was just, from that moment on, I was just like, man, this episode's all about the love and the humanity. And then it just, yeah, it didn't disappoint.
The humanity. This is a great episode, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like,
no,
I really loved it.
I thought it was the best episode so far of the season. You know, we talked a little bit about the last few episodes, how it was a little bit slow. They were kind of laying the groundwork and getting us started after what happened with season one, but I really felt like this was the most intense kind of action-packed episode really to date for season two.
Which, you said action-packed? Because I feel like there was less, on the whole, less action.
Not in this season. I think this is the only the first episode that's actually had like swords and shields and killing, other than the first the games from the first scene of the season opener.
It felt, though, to me, it felt that it was much more character driven, which was interesting.
You did. Yeah, you're right. Well, no, you had a lot of character development in this episode, but I do think you got more action than you have. I mean, you had the scene with Yoren, and you had the fight between Brienne and Loras Tyrell, and you know, a couple of other things here and there, but I think overall it was kind of the most complete episode, at least in my opinion.
I think the thing about the action, though, that what Eric is saying is that because it was so character driven, even when they were fighting, you were sort of focusing on the characters' emotions about it, as opposed to focusing on the fighting itself. Like in the big fight scene with Yoren and them, it was all about Arya's response to what was going on, as opposed to just like hack slash action, which I think made it better because, as you say, Micah, it made it more complete.
Well, you guys got to also think about this. It's about time that we get an episode like this. What, next week is halfway through the season already.
It's episode four next week, right?
But we had talked about the pacing and everything like that. Well, are we on episode four? Hang on.
No, this was episode three.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
my bad.
Three. You're getting confused
by
episodes of our podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, so 2 weeks. So it's about time. We talked about last week how everything was building up. Well, they're to the point right now where they're starting to build up and build up even more. And before we know it, it will be mid-season. And then it'll be, you know, everything from there is usually downhill at a very, very fast pace. I mean, everything from last season was from Viserys getting gold poured on his head. Everything from then on was just like a downhill roller coaster.
Super depressing.
Right. So what you're saying is we're used to all of this crazy action, but yet we're started again on the beginning of a new season, right?
Right. We're starting to get a feel for the pacing.
Well, I mean, that's the mechanic of any television show. They're not going to, I mean, unless you're watching 24, which even then it still kind of has its own lull. Like, no TV show is going to just throw you into some bullshit. Like, even like Battlestar, which gets pretty crazy around the transition between season 3 and 4, will relax for an episode or two and let you catch up or let the new people sort of get accustomed to what's about to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing right now, because they're building a whole lot, because they're not only building what happened in book one, you know, they're covering this next book, and there's so much shit that's happening. And like we've said before, they're pulling in so many different timelines that it can't really be what it was thought to be. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
How else do we compare these episodes to each other? Like, was there less sex in this episode than there was in other episodes?
Yeah.
Well, less girl on girl. I mean, less guy on girl action and more guy on guy.
Is that how you
this
guys
This is the perfect
it,
time
really?
To bring up the SNL sketch. This is the perfect time to bring up that
yeah,
sketch.
That was so
What's
funny.
That?
Andy Samberg played a character that was, and it was a whole like sort of riff on the HBO behind the scenes stuff, and we'll put it in the show notes in this news post. But it was a riff on HBO behind the scenes where Deb Hoff and Weiss get on there and they're like, oh, this is what happened in Game of Thrones this week. The Thrones was, there was a game for it. And they like have a, you know, description of the episode and they get into the characters and Tyrion's like, I really like my character. He's small and he's good, you know, and they talk and it's really fun. But the guy who played R.R. Martin was like, oh, well, we've got this, you know, he's a creative consultant and he makes the episode so good. And it was like, he's supposed to be the 13-year-old kid. It was Andy Samberg. He's like this 13-year-old Jewish kid. And he's like, I remember particularly this scene where this guy was talking to himself. And he's talking about, you know, the big scene from last season where Littlefinger was giving his whole dialogue about liking Catelyn Stark so much.
Yes.
And he was like, and I just thought this was so boring. So what I did was threw two girls in the back, totally naked, going at it. And it just became an actually a good.
It makes so much sense.
Oh, it's so well. Good. So good. And I know that it's probably, that's not what you guys want us to dissect on the show or whatever. And whatever.
It was so funny, though. You should all watch it, definitely.
Yeah, definitely watch it. It was some good shit.
Totally
but
gonna see that.
It was good. No, Mike had texted me before I watched this because I was actually coming back from the live show and I watched it that Sunday night on HBO Go. And I was just like, man, this really is a good episode. He texted me and was like, hey, this is the best episode so far. And so I watched it and it was excellent. And I saw exactly what you guys were saying, just like this pacing between each scene and each scene. It's like everything was just cut out and it was like, hey, here's a heart to heart. Hey, here's a heart to heart. Hey, here's a heart to heart. You know what I'm saying?
Here's the Grand Meister getting action for the second scene. In,
I know, right?
In the series.
I know. When he pulls out of that room, or actually when he walks out of that room, it was a good time.
That was so sad, though. I felt so uncomfortable with that.
Well, what about last season when you see him get all sprightly and he's like popping his back after that girl leaves and you're like, man, she's old enough to be his great-great-granddaughter.
Well, honestly, it wasn't so much that. It was more like the way that they like... They treat him, because I know that he's obviously, as we're going to talk about, he's obviously like a kind of a bad guy. But I just, because he's so old, I felt so bad for him.
Well, I know, but age doesn't allow you to be a slime ball.
Oh,
you know,
no, of course.
What I liked was that they were talking about, you know, that scene with the confrontation there. They were talking about the past king's hands, you know, hand of the king, and how they've been betrayed. You know, and that Tyrion had set this trap, you know. In this episode, this little subplot, he runs around setting the trap. It's super well done. You know what's happening immediately. I mean, after the first shock where somebody else is in the room, you know, than was a moment before. But you get the idea, he's setting this trap, and you wait to, you know, thank God we didn't have to wait another episode to see it unfold. You know, within the confines of this episode, with everything else happening, Tyrion starts and finishes, you know, what he sets out to do, which is really cool.
I was afraid because I really thought like we were going to have to wait episodes and episodes to see what happened with this. You know what I mean? Because I haven't read this far yet, so I don't know any of this. This is all new to me.
Oh.
I was like, this is some genius shit. I really like this, you know, so it was cool.
What was so great about it, I felt, was that obviously it was great because Tyrion was awesome as usual, but it was also great because they... You know, oftentimes in TV shows, when they pull stuff like this, they have to make it really obvious to make sure the audience understands. But I felt like in this case, the writers, they really weren't speaking down to the audience because they were saying, okay, we know that our audience can remember like 5 minutes back, so we don't have to make it blatantly obvious, like the different stories he was telling people, which I quite liked.
But I thought...
Because I felt intelligent.
The editing, I was going to say, was awesome. The way that they were able to kind of put that all together, where it went from being Pycelle to Varys to Littlefinger. It was just, it was really, really well done. And I think also you get to see how Tyrion is really manipulating power now and starting to assert himself in King's Landing as the Hand of the King. I mean, everything that he's done up to this point and now... He's slowly also, if you notice, taking out those that are very loyal to his sister.
Absolutely. I thought it was great because it was interesting because seeing him do that is much different than seeing all the other assholes doing even less. You hate them so much. You see Tyrion do it and you're like, you go get it, man. Kick some ass. While you're doing that, maybe, you know, save someone from getting beheaded.
Fish, though.
Well, even to the characters, every one of those scenarios was plausible. The way that Tyrion told those stories, he could have been giving, you know, Cersei's daughter to any of those people for any of those reasons. And it kind of, just to me, it brought out how wide the world is, how anything might happen, you know, because those three scenarios were equally plausible, at least enough for each of those people to believe them, you know, enough to
Do you think Varys believed him, though, Eric? Mm. Do you really think Varys believed him? Because he was the one that I don't think really bought into it.
Okay, but look at the scene afterwards where he's congratulating Tyrion on, you know, the game well played, as opposed to Littlefinger's response, which is, don't ever include me in that kind of stuff ever again.
Right.
You know, because he is hoodwinked.
Sort of, I think he bought into it initially, but I think that's kind of why the different responses are so, you know, they make so much sense because Varys now respects Tyrion a lot more. I think he sees him as a worthy player of the game, if you will. And I think that's why, you know, even though he sort of, he bought it, that's good because that means that Varys now has another person there who isn't just stupid, you know what I mean? That he can use for his own purposes because Tyrion is actually intelligent. And I think that alliance between them, while neither of them obviously trust each other, it's going to, you know what I mean? It's going to be sort of cool.
Definitely. Yeah, it's nice. I get less annoyed when I'm watching the show and I don't see a bunch of dunderheads walking around about to get themselves killed, which is what happened to Ned, you know?
I think it's the bullshitter bullshitting the bullshitter.
Oh, I like Ned too, but you know what I mean? Like, doesn't it? It's like you get those moments where you want to scream at the TV, like, don't trust him. He just said, don't trust him.
Yeah.
You get less of those when you've got people like Tyrion running the show.
Yeah.
Because he'll just throw shit at you.
I think it's because, you know, it's good that Tyrion knows that Varys is like that, you know, and I don't think Tyrion's going to let his guard down the same way that Ned Stark did in response to what Zach was saying.
But to Selena's point, I think that you're seeing a relationship develop now also between Varys and Tyrion. And it's an important relationship because even though there may not be a whole lot of trust going on, I think you do have that respect between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, yeah, exactly. There is that respect. And I think that's what's going to sort of play in down the line, you know? They can use each other on a higher plane than just as pawns.
Not to transition so quickly, but we also got to see a lot more of Winterfell, which is what I was happy with. The entire sequence where it followed Hodor from outside in through the keep and into the castle and into Bran's room. I think that finally you got to who was it? Eric, you don't know who Hodor is? Do you know who Hodor is now?
It's yes, that was not just a heart to heart. That scene was a Hodor to Hodor.
Right.
You know, he's looking at himself and he goes Hodor, but he's not recognizing himself. The camera's recognizing Hodor. But he's introducing himself to the entire Game of Thrones audience. He's Hodor.
Just in case anyone missed it from the last season, you got it.
Are you kidding? That's a big giant dire wolf.
Yeah, and that must be a hard
job. I thought
job
it was good,
actor.
Though.
He's smiling.
Yeah, why
this
not?
Dire
the dire wolf
comes
awesome.
Stalking towards him.
I'm afraid, though, with all of the way that Bran's dreaming, because I think that he may imprint soon. Not to mix fandoms, but I really think that he might do that. So I just
oh, no.
he's getting to that age. Micah, don't pretend
on
like
Hodor.
You don't know.
I don't.
It's from Twilight.
Not read
it's from
Twilight.
The Twilight yeah, Chronicles of Narnia, Micah. You'll understand it. Okay, really, you haven't?
Oh my god!
All right, we're gonna have a slumber party, Micah. We're gonna watch all of these films.
Oh god, I can't
That's
wait.
That's one slumber party. I won't be upset if I'm not invited.
Do a commentary.
We got to learn a lot more
yeah,
about Maester Luwin, which was awesome because he got to speak a lot more than he did last season. Much about himself, which I thought mm-hmm. was great too. And
yeah, this I think was my favorite. Scene with him and Bran.
Absolutely.
And it was interesting as well because, you know, they sort of mentioned old Nan, who of course the actress who played her of course passed away in season one, so it's interesting that they've sort of, instead of replacing her, they've just chosen to say she's still there but she's not.
Right.
And Maester Luwin has kind of taken over her role in terms of explaining things to Bran about the quote-unquote mythical creatures that aren't really mythical.
Was anyone else reminded of the exposition I went on episodes ago? And Terrence, you brought this up at dinner one time this weekend, but say they're living in this fictitious world where the way their particles have assimilated each other, they have magic. And Maester Luwin's talking to Bran about magic, and he's like, hey, man, magic's gone. Magic has basically gone away. Mm-hmm. Like, do you guys think that the magic can actually go away, or if that's some, they just have lost the ability to dick with it, essentially?
Yeah, like we were talking about, Zach, was that it's still there. It could possibly be there, but it's the ability to create some sort of a harness for it, because the energy, no matter what energy is, energy is going to be everywhere. But to be able to use it and know how to use it, I think that's what has gotten lost.
Well, we see small blips of it, but with the communication that the Stark children have with all their direwolves, correct?
Yes. But no one really believes that, though, which is significant. I think it's not so much that magic is gone from the world and people need to tell themselves that it is to keep them and their children feeling safe.
I agree. And I liked the one scene that he had. I forget exactly what the quote was, but I thought it was kind of cool placement by the writers of the show saying, I think, and again, I might get this wrong, but he said, the dragons are dead, the giants are gone and the children of the forest are forgotten, or some combination of those. But I thought it was such cool placement because you know that dragons aren't dead, and you kind of have the feeling that giants are around somewhere. So, you know, without giving anything else away, I think it's just, it was cool that they were able to kind of put that in there. Right. And
what's the appeal?
Hoping that it comes into play later on.
Have you seen Hodor? He has plenty of appeal to the ladies.
I don't think he's Hodor. Necessarily a giant. Does he count as a giant?
He's like
Hagrid. I think of giants, I think of you know, big, big giants like Harry Potter, countryside giants. I just don't think that that is something that's appealing at all.
There was a countryside giant.
Countryside giants. All right, that sounds like a rock band.
As far as mythical creatures go, they could do something more interesting. Next to Children of the Forest, giants just seems dumb. Because you're like, oh, Children of the Forest? They're forgotten? What are they?
Right.
Like, I'm super excited about the Children of the Forest. Giants, eh, not so much. I think they just needed a second
thing. Care about that.
Unless they're in the books.
I was just going to say, I think that the appeal of the giants is the same as the appeal of the giants in Harry Potter. You know, they're kind of, you know, they don't really fit into the world, but as an attack force, they're useful just because they're big and strong. I think it's pretty much all that they are.
Hodor's going to be sent
and
out there.
And the same as Harry Potter. It doesn't really make sense. He's
no,
not really a giant, though,
that was just
though,
a dick joke, guys.
Hodor's going to be sent out there with a dire wolf and to be sent to look for the giants. Okay, bad Harry Potter reference. Never mind.
Yes.
I can go on.
Like Hagrid and Fang.
I was thinking, you know, Hodor, Hagrid, you know.
Are you comparing Hodor to Hagrid?
Yes.
That is the worst thing
I've
ever heard.
That's not a bad comparison, actually.
I was saying he was like Hagrid, like partially giant, wow, but not like him. Oh, God.
Well, Hagrid wasn't too bright, and Hodor can only say one word, so.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because they're completely similar. You're going to get burnt at the stake, my friend.
I mean, can you imagine Hodor and Hagrid having a conversation? Like dragons, right. And then you hear Hodor going, Hodor. Dragons, Hodor.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Would that happen no matter who Hodor had a conversation with?
That's true, Micah. Valid point. Let's move on before anyone ruins their relationship with another fandom and gets burned at the stake any faster and talk about how bad of a badass Renly Baratheon was just at the beginning of the scene that Catelyn Stark walked into and started to talk to him. I thought it was awesome. I thought Renly was a total badass.
Renly? Yes. What do you mean? How could you even look at Renly?
Well, I'm
in
talking
this
about.
Scene?
I'm talking about. I mean, you know, that shit with Brienne happened, right? 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 All right, and we'll get to that. But I just wanted to say, like, I thought it was
Renly's
cool.
Awesome.
It was cool.
I
like, she
Renly.
Walks in and she's like, she says, "King in the North," and he's like, "Okay, whatever." Like, he liked Ned. He's a stand up dude, and he was like, "Listen, Catelyn, I'm gonna kill that bastard. We're gonna bring his head to you. You're cool with me. Just hang out. Let's chill." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, my eyes were on
Renly. Right, and
I
gotta
scene.
Say, like, out of all the candidates right now, I'm on Team Renly. Like, I absolutely think that first of all, he technically has the most claim. You know, way more claim than Rob. Rob doesn't have any claim to the throne. He's just sort of decided to run for king. And also, Renly's just awesome.
Yeah, but Rob only wants to be
him.
King in the North. That's different than taking the whole of Westeros.
That's true. That is.
Yeah, I think Renly. I mean, I don't know if he. I can't. Never mind. I'm not even. We'll get to him later.
My eyes were on Renly in that scene, in the opening scene as well, because he just seems to have this life about him, like him and you know, Theon. Are both, I think, you know, two young men who are just in general, like, you kind of care about everything that happens to them. And that's not to say that it separates
really?
Them from yeah. different characters. But I'm saying, in general, like, those are the two guys I'm watching the most on this show. Because, you know, I connect their plights together. But, I don't know, it's weird that guy, you know, Renly is, you know, has the most power. Right now, in all the Westeros, and yet he hasn't ever slept with his wife of 2 weeks, and he's in a real personal situation, you know, regarding that. But yet he is the one who's most currently, you know, in power of most of he has the most men.
Wait, Eric, did you say Theon also?
Yeah, Theon is
well,
is
okay. Give Theon a couple of episodes, and we'll revisit this.
Yeah, no shit. Right?
Tell me how much
yeah,
you like.
I haven't even read it, but I see
it.
Feel for him
too.
Moving. moving forward.
Oh, come on. But he had that scene where, I mean, he screamed at his father, you sold me. You gave me away. You didn't even want me. It was like a dog.
Yeah,
I was
owned,
oh, my, this is my heartbreaking.
He owned Balin Greyjoy, but they're both dickheads. And I like Theon, but he's still a dickhead.
I don't know yet.
I think Theon is, though, a matter of circumstance. He is sort of a victim of circumstance, because I think in that scene, we're kind of jumping ahead now, but in that scene, like, I do see what Eric is saying. I think that there's no win for Theon. His family has completely disowned him, but it's still the family that he feels loyal to. So I definitely see that. But I don't think that, like, you guys know how
right.
I feel
okay,
about
well,
Theon.
I'm going to do this for you, Shana, so. Since you've been tweeting a storm about this today, before we start talking about the Greyjoys, please, please, please tell everyone and confess your love to this tall woman.
Okay, I will do, you guys. Let's stop talking about Renly and, you know, Jon Snow and all the other hot men on the show, because Brienne is here and and I love her, and she's way taller than all the men anyway. No, seriously though, how badass of an entrance was that? I mean, she is just so badass. That is like female empowerment.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think because she says to Catelyn, "I'm not really a woman, or I'm not really a lady."
Well, she's not saying that she's not like a female lady, and those times mean like it's like a knight version of a girl.
Okay, I'm just saying. I was just like, okay, she doesn't associate with herself with, you know, the ladies like Catelyn. So I understood that, but I was like, no, I like the lipstick warriors, you know.
You like the
well, did you not
ladies?
See the parallel that she was drawing with, you know, Catelyn and her eyes between Arya and Brienne just in that, like, exact moment? That's a mechanic of the literature right there.
Yeah, and the thing about, like, Brienne, when she says things like that, like, you can see, like, the pain associated with that statement. You know, it's not because she doesn't want to be a lady. It's because, you know, they call her Brienne the Beauty, and I think the show is going to explore the
I didn't see that in this episode. I think it's, you know, coming
on.
From having not read, but
that is true. It is hard to have some of these conversations, isn't it? Because don't want to be too jump too far ahead. But I definitely saw the pain in her eyes, and I think if you read the books, you saw it.
I haven't read it yet, but she was a babe. I mean, she was really tall, but she still was a babe.
Super tall.
I mean,
in real life, she is so pretty.
She was pretty on the show. I mean, she hacked the shit out of the other pretty guy. You know what I mean? Just pretty people knocking the hell out
of
each
people,
other.
Pretty people.
Pretty people watching. And then Catelyn Stark comes out.
How tall is she, though? About 6'3"?
Yeah, Catelyn was like a baby doll next to her.
Micah, I think you have a chance, Micah. I really do.
No, just don't call her a lady, right?
Right, don't call her a lady. Although, you know what? You might be lucky with that, because not many people sincerely call her a lady. Anyway, let's pivot. Let's pivot back onto the Greyjoys. And, you know, who was it? Who was saying something really... Eric, you were going on about that scene. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, man. Well, not only when he confronts his father, but following that scene, when he's writing that letter to Robb Stark, or he's already written it, and... I didn't freeze frame it or anything. I assume he's about to tell him kind of what his father is planning, but then he decides to burn it instead. You know, that was a character moment. That was a moment that was
he made his
you
choice.
You know, he made his choice, and his choice was to side with his family, even though his dad gives him one ship, and gives his sister 30 of them. His ship is named Sea Bitch, and he has to go. He has to go and gut.
Is that Seabiscuit's older brother or something?
Tell me you guys thought of Seabiscuit when he said that.
I did.
And then it made you think of Spider-Man. Come on, don't lie.
Yeah, and then I thought of Spider-Man. Then I was like, why am I thinking? And then I was thinking, why isn't Mary Jane Parker here among all these other things? we need some more. Game of Thrones, I love the show, but it needs more Upside Down in the Rain kisses, I think.
Seabitch.
Just in general. Seabitch.
Now,
so, anyway,
it's Yara that says that to him also, right?
Yeah, she's the sea bitch, man. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, she's totally the sea bitch.
Awesome as well. I mean, the girls on the show are great, and as well because, you know, they're not so over-glamorized. I don't know how you guys are responding to that, but I love it.
Listen, you're biased as hell. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Wow.
I have to be. I'm the only girl on the show.
Let's talk about glamorous women here for a second. What about Sansa? In this episode, because I was shocked that they gave her more than two lines in this episode. and she actually had something to do.
Sansa she's hurting so much right now that she's taking her pain out on other people and all that other crap. And here's something interesting that we learned. We learned that they don't have, okay, since they don't have bathrooms and stuff like that, they have chamber pots. Did anybody else catch that?
Okay. Well, do you expect them to have, like, toilets?
I never thought of it like that before. I always thought they just hung their ass out the side of the castle and just, you know.
It's called King's Landing for a reason.
Exactly. That's why it's tall.
Beware of landings.
Oh, God.
No.
You guys planned that joke. I know you did. Don't lie to me.
No, we totally did not. I would not plan that joke.
We didn't. But no, Sansa, she's hurting so much right now, really. And it's, she's taking things out the wrong way on different people. And, you know, somebody that's only being told what to do, because obviously Shay doesn't want to be a handmaiden. She didn't want to, you know, really do anything like that. But I thought Sansa was kind of a bitch. Really?
I didn't think that at all.
Me either.
I didn't think it because, you know, the thing of it is Sansa, really, by the end of that conversation, she was lonely. It was very, very apparent how lonely, even to Shay, how lonely she was. And so she was like, well, just brush my hair. You know, Sansa had her temper tantrum, you know, in front of Shay, but, you know, rightly so. And then she didn't like say, like, what Joffrey would have done is would have insulted and then killed Shay. Like, on the spot. Like, Sansa is fortunately a little bit smarter than that, a little bit better than that. So, and she accepted Shay's service, so.
I mean, she's scared to death, man. Yeah. Her dad was just killed. She's got that blonde dude that's definitely gonna be impregnating her. Like, all they do is talk about how they're gonna kill the rest of her family. Like, she's pissed and sad. No, seriously. And, you know, she acted like she wasn't the best friend with Arya, but she's like, where's her pal now? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Septa Mordain's gone. Life is shit for her right now. So when someone comes in and it's just like not doing her job, she's like, are you kidding me? Just brush my damn hair. All right. This is the only good thing about being a lady. You know what I mean?
But I thought it was an awesome dynamic, though, when you had Tommen say that he wouldn't like it if Robb Stark was killed. And, you know, it was just that whole conversation. You see sort of how young and impressionable these kids are. And there was even a moment, I thought, where Cersei looked over at Sansa, and I forget what was being said, but you can almost see her feel bad for her a little bit, but then by the end of the conversation, she switched it back. So you saw that motherly instinct a little bit, but then she went back to being herself.
And the thing about that scene was that you could tell that Cersei saw herself in Sansa, that whole being married away, you know, against your will, being away from your family, being married to someone that you really don't like, and entering into that loveless marriage. I mean, Cersei knows all about that. But I think, like, the brilliance, well, not, you know, I know that she,
are
like,
you kidding me? Cersei knows first, all about that. For does, sure she does.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm saying that, okay, she may know about it, but, I mean, we talked about this last episode, too, and what, were we supposed to be feeling sorry for Cersei at that particular moment?
Oh, no, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely
I don't think Cersei feels sorry for Sansa at all during that dinner sequence. The only time I recall seeing Cersei's mother instinct was when Tyrion had threatened to, you know, when the word got out that her daughter would be married off. And then you see Cersei, you know, pretty much in tears saying, you know, you will not marry my only daughter. You know, father gave you this piece of paper, makes you think you can do this. You can't do that. You know, she's my only daughter.
There is a moment, though, at the dinner, Selena pointed out, it's when she's when Sansa's talking about being married off to Joffrey, that you get this look from Cersei. And it's to the point that Selena was just making. It's very brief, but it's definitely there.
I must have missed it, because all I see from Cersei when she looks at Sansa is like these hungry vulture eyes about ready to tear her up if she says one thing that's pro-Stark. Again, that's just how I feel about those two.
And I think you're right in the sense that Cersei is, you know, obviously, what are the Lannister words? It's something like family, honor, something else. She clearly, you know, it's the Lannisters first and foremost, and Cersei is more than willing to, you know, sacrifice anything that comes in the way of that. But at the same time, there's definitely something like Cersei knows what it's like to be in Sansa's situation. But just a quick thing that I wanted to say about Sansa before we move on is that I think that actually, in all her imperfections, she is one of the best illustrated characters in the story, because she is so flawed and because she is so different from, you know, so many of the other characters are, even despite their flaws, they're so brave in a way that you wouldn't get in the real world. You know, you've got Arya, you've got all the women we've already talked about. We've got Tyrion, we've got all these characters who, no matter if they're good or bad, they fight for what they believe in. And then you've got Sansa, who is that traditional sort of stereotypical lady who just wants a knight to come and save her and doesn't understand why why that's not happening. And I feel that is so, it's so complete that, you know, you might not like her, but you definitely understand her. Yeah.
It was refreshing to see her, you know, for such a duration of time in this episode. And it felt in a way that maybe that's why this episode felt different. Just, you know, it showed those characters like her, and again, all the heart to hearts, but still just in general, like, I'm thinking, if Sansa is somehow like the show's emotional core, like if say there's an overarching point the show's trying to make, and that somehow it's on Sansa's shoulders, like that would explain why she's hidden away most of the time. Either that or she's a minor character, you know, not important to
the
action.
That's interesting.
But I'm just thinking, like, you know, with what you're seeing about Cersei, you know, relating to her, which I completely missed, and then, you know, the rest of what Sansa's doing, like, you know, in this episode, taking on this handmaiden, even though it's Tyrion's idea, you know, I forgot that she was around there, but I was reminded during this episode, and now I really want to see where that goes. I really want to see more about Sansa. You know, I didn't really care for her all that much last season, and I guess how could you, you know, with what she allowed Joffrey to do. But I just think in general, like, now I have renewed faith and hope for her.
I mean, at the end of the day, she is a small child, and you were talking a lot about it, Selena, but I never really lost faith in her last season, because even though she was a total ass bag, you know, if you read the books, you do get to see a lot more from her perspective, which sort of saves a lot of grace within her character. But, I mean, like you were saying, she's just a lady looking for a knight to save her. And unfortunately, like, by this time in the show, we know for sure, and we didn't know it for sure last season, but we know it for sure now, that she doesn't want it to be Joffrey. She just wants to get the hell out of there, like Arya is doing. And she's taking a wagon and all that stuff with a band of merry men up north. Eric knows much about merry men heading up north, right, Eric?
Man, we were all merry men this weekend, weren't we, Zach?
Yes, I was
talking about your outfit, but yes, you're right.
Yeah.
that entire sequence, and, you know, we've kind of stepped forward from last week, obviously, as you do in a TV show, but we've stepped forward, and, you know, we had the conflict with the Night's Watch camp. And now we have sort of the resolution from that conflict, which, you know, didn't happen immediately. But there was just incredible, incredible scene, I thought. And it might not have been the most visually striking. It definitely wasn't the most visually striking. But it was an incredible exchange of dialogue between this child actor and the actor, I don't remember his name specifically, who plays Yoren. But Arya and Yoren were just that dynamic between them, and just her acting, like, Maisie destroyed it. Like, it was so good. I was so impressed.
And then he pulled the Boromir.
Yeah.
I know. That was so sad.
God. Yeah, he did all the arrows. He did pull Boromir.
Yeah, which is
the little ones.
Much different, and Selena, you can correct me, but, I mean, this was different from the books, because it's an all-out fight in the books. It's not just Yoren going to battle by himself.
Yeah, alone, yeah.
And that was kind of disappointing, I thought, because it would have been cool to kind of see all of these people who are traveling to the wall kind of rally behind Yoren and fight. And even the subsequent scene, I mean, Arya and Gendry are kind of on the run for a little bit by themselves before they're finally caught. So
yeah, and that is such an important part of their sort of bonding experience in the book. Like, I loved reading about that, so I was really sad that they skipped that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Jorn did have a fantastic line, though. What did he say? Something about there are men out there waiting to fuck your corpses, so get fighting or whatever.
Oh,
he said.
God, that's so good. Oh, that's so good.
That's such a Game of Thrones-ism. Yeah. Get going, boys.
It sounds so much better when the Swede says it, though. It's so
And was that line the accent. Was that the mountain that showed up?
I think it was, yeah.
I don't remember.
Or the tickler?
That sounds
the mountain,
dirty.
You mean the brother.
The tickler.
It does in the We're, book oh, as well, though.
Please tell us on Twitter. I'm not exactly sure. I don't...
He's one of Renly's men.
Really?
No, I... Never
mind. Okay. Okay.
Oh,
okay. Oh, I got you.
That. Okay.
We well, didn't get that. Oh, God.
Renly's wife that is was... very... She's wow. very forgiving. She's very that, forgiving. That
she was amazing, wasn't she?
You know, she doesn't yeah. care. She doesn't care at
no,
all.
Why does she care?
She
There's plenty of soldiers
she
outside.
She's in it for some reason.
Well, yeah, like, she's in it for power, baby. That's what she's in it for. Come
she
on
wants,
now.
She wants to be... Well, she's already the queen, I guess.
Yeah.
But then she was like, you want me to get my brother in here to get you started? She was
yes.
just like,
that was... Wow. That was messed
well,
up.
Well, she was being
she
kind it, of a bitch there.
But she played was, it... Yeah. Okay, but she played it like... She said, you have enemies, and the best way to, you know, my lord, the best way to keep your enemies away is for you to put a baby in my belly. She wasn't saying the best way to make me so most powerful is for us to have a kid. She was saying to save yourself, you have to do this.
Well, yeah, she's not going to say it outright, though.
Okay, but I just thought that she plays the game. That's all.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, she's
she
just
does.
Playing the game.
She really
yeah.
does. And you know what was funny? And I guess, Micah, you might have an opinion on this as well, but this was one of the things that I thought deviated a lot from the book, because when I read first about Marguerite Tyrell in the books, like I just did not like her at all. But when I watched the show, I actually felt a lot of sympathy for her. And even
she
though, yeah, she's definitely
not bad
playing
to
the
look
game.
At either.
Yeah, it's kind of a trend of the ladies on the show with you, Selena. You just have a lot of sympathy for them, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess so,
Terrence. Mm-hmm.
But I don't really remember much of this, though. I think they're building it up a little bit more in the show than I think we read about in the books, at least from what I can recall. Just because I remember Renly's storyline playing itself out very quickly in the
oh,
book.
Oh no. Oh,
they're
no.
going for a little of that Glee audience is what they're doing. That's what they're trying to get.
Yeah.
It makes complete sense.
Renly Glee night, mixed, Glee mixed with what, like Hotel Erotica or something?
I don't know what that
I mean,
is.
Seriously. I'm just throwing a name out there, but obviously,
yeah.
you know, come on.
Just off the top of your head.
Yeah, just off the top of my head.
I mean, I never mind.
Anyway.
Yeah. Never mind.
Anyway,
okay. anyway,
let's talk about when homeboy gets stabbed in the throat. All right.
Oh,
he's like,
okay.
Oh, my leg. There's an arrow in the leg. Help me. I'll
you know,
do shit with
he was
you guys.
Kind of a douche, though. If he didn't,
yeah, I was
you know,
say.
Talk the way that he did, he might have had a chance.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
I think kind of a douche. The boy's dying.
I mean, not with an arrow
carry
in his leg.
Me?
He's not dying. I mean,
carry me. Well, there are 100 men all on horseback. One of them could spare, you know, their horseback, I'm pretty sure, right?
I would have said Any? Kill him.
But see,
hell with
my,
him.
My, this is, my concern yeah. my concern was that he was going to turn the real Gendry in because he found the bull helmet, and, you know, after everyone has learned that the men are after the kid who has the bull helmet. So, I don't know. When he died, I was like, oh, thank God, because he picked it up. You know, he picked it up and was walking around with it. And that was going to cause, you know, trouble if he were to you know, try and turn Gendry in. That's what I thought was going to happen. And then he was injured, and then he died. And then, you know, Arya – and believe me, Terrence, you can vouch for this. I called that Arya was going – I said, somebody, please, please, somebody say that boy you just killed so mercilessly was – sorry, I said Renly. I meant Gendry. That
right.
boy was Gendry. And then Arya Stark did. She was like, Yori got him. I was like, yes!
Yep, he did.
Yep. Thank you.
That was a good moment.
That story was worth telling because you backed me up. So.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And, I mean, another important moment from that scene was when Arya saves, Jaqen H'ghar from
yes.
the cart. Him and his friends.
What a cool last name he has, H'ghar.
Kind of like Hodor.
I was googling this earlier. A lot of people think that he's well, never mind. We can get to that at a later point. Because
now I really want to know.
A lot of people.
It's gonna be another one of those ass high moments. You're gonna get corrected on Twitter, Micah. Better just spit it out.
That's not how
now.
You pronounce it.
Oh yeah.
Sorry,
a shy.
He knows everybody.
I knew that.
I haven't even read
the books. Yeah. But I read all those tweets against you, Mike.
Didn't read the books, but I read the tweets. The tagline for Game of Owns, the podcast.
If we had a dollar for every time we pronounced something wrong.
Oh, God. But you know what? You guys are so nice in your ratings and reviews and not being so mean to us for getting things wrong. Because you know what? At the end of the day, we're just humans too. And man,
yeah,
I don't
and
know
at
how
the end of the day,
names.
We're trying to like pronounce ridiculous things from like a really confusing book. So
Authors try that, like Hermione. Okay, again, a Harry Potter reference.
All right, who called? Okay, first off, I know this is not Game of Thrones related, but what did you guys in your earlier years, if you started reading before the films, what did you call Hermione before you knew
how
to pronounce
it? I mean, it would have
name?
Had to have been Hermione, right? I mean, Hermione's not a real name, is it? I mean,
all right. What about you, Selena?
Name.
What about
definitely
you, Selena?
Not common.
The Danish audiobooks actually pronounce it Hermione, which just sounds like some kind of bad disease.
Right. What about you, Terrence?
I didn't start reading the books until I saw the first movie, like almost a year after it came out.
No. But Zach. I'm the same way. But Zach. So it's true. It's true. I'm sorry if that leaves a bad
terrible.
Taste in your mouth.
Oh,
I'm telling
God.
You though, like without the movies, and I give credit to the movies for this. Without this television show, you know, when's it gonna matter? To be honest, how these names are pronounced. Because it's a fantasy fiction series. When does it possibly matter the pronunciation?
When you do a podcast about them.
That's, well, I mean, matter to who? Matter in your mind? Okay, Micah, what did you think Hermione's name was? Excuse me.
No, I saw the movies first.
Man, I thought it was Hermoine. I know that's dumb, but I thought it was Hermoine.
It sounds like a garden creature
I know.
Or something.
Wow.
I know, I'm stupid. It sounds like a Pokemon, second evolution.
But okay, so Tolkien had like a pronunciation, Kate,
Tolkien.
Right? Tolkien. Oh, okay. Did Tolkien give himself that pronunciation in his pronunciation?
That's actually how it's spelled, though.
Tolkien. Okay.
He must have left that out.
When two vowels are close to each other, it makes a long sound. English language. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm saying, okay, so anyway, this pronunciation key, you know, sometimes we do mispronounce this stuff. Okay. But it's sometimes authors make it a little harder than it has to be with a name like Hermione. That was my only point.
Okay.
Fair point.
I thought it was very interesting when Commander Mormont, when he was talking to John, they were like, hey, what's up? You just got beat up and thrown into this room. Tell me what happened. And he goes, dudes, I saw them give away babies to people that were eating the babies. And he was like, is that so? And John's like, you knew about it. And so he knew about it. And I thought that was really interesting. And then it automatically shifts focus from that scene to Sam and Gilly.
I really loved that scene. I thought it was a very sort of one of those things that could be a bit throwaway, but it was a nice way to establish the bond that they have with each other. And I think the feelings of responsibility and protectiveness that Sam has of Gilly. And it also established for the audience that it wasn't Gilly's baby being killed in the last episode, because I think quite a few people thought that.
Wait, I thought that. Was that not her baby? Was she
still
pregnant in this
baby.
Episode?
She had that baby bump, man.
Well, the baby bump is kind of residual, isn't it? I mean, not all of it, but you're
yeah, that was a bit
true.
Unclear.
That's
in the
true.
Show.
But
that was
she didn't look she was pregnant. I mean, Sam looked more pregnant than she did.
Wow. What does he give her?
Because
Terrence and I were watching the episode together. And we thought it was a thimble. And then Terrence, we both, at the same moment, we thought that it was like Hook. And that he had just given her a kiss.
Yeah, he pulled her. He pulled Peter Pan.
Don't you know what a kiss is? I shall want you give one to me.
It was a dreidel. He's Jewish, guys. Come on.
Was it a dreidel?
No, it wasn't a dreidel.
Sorry.
No, it's a thimble.
Okay, that's thimble. What I thought. Because he was talking about sewing and things like that.
It's his mother's, I believe.
But it had a nipple on it at the end of it.
But in that world, they have nipple thimbles, man. So that works.
I gotta get me one of those.
Yeah, you do. It was a really sort of. It was a very. I don't know, what did I think of? It was a very intimate exchange that they had, which I thought was interesting because he talks so much about women, sort of, in the last season, and then you touch on it a little bit in this season, and then he's just like, you know what? He's like, I don't know how to talk to girls. It's like, Sam, you know how to talk to girls, bro, because you were just spitting some mad game on that girl just then.
Yeah, but I mean, the only game that that girl has been seeing is her father's.
Well, her father's got game, apparently, man. Look at all that shit.
Okay, okay, but why does the Grandmaster of the Wall, okay, the Night's Watch, why am I getting his title wrong every time, I promise? Why did he let that happen? His line to Jon Snow was, we need people like him. And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Why do we need people like him?
Yeah, why? And do they mean for housing when they're north of the wall and shit's all scary and tense?
Partially.
Like, for warmth? Okay, but what else could he, what else did he mean by that? We need people like him. Because, you know, ultimately, and I argued this myself, that Craster was a sympathetic character by the end of, you know, the revelation at the end of last week's episode. But I'm still thinking now that, you know, based on the justification that was given, I'm with Jon Snow in this whole thing. Like, that's really heinous what they're doing
well,
to those kids.
Well, yeah, Eric, it's definitely heinous. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a kingdom north of the wall. It's like when Harry gets pissed, and I'm bringing up Harry Potter, whatever. It's like when Harry gets pissed that shit's happening that he doesn't really like. It's just like, well, it's none of your business, man. Like, stay out of it. You know, like, you're not the guy who does everything. Like, some shit's going down, and if you let them do what they're doing, then you'll be able to have safe passage and you won't disrupt the flow of how they have things happening up there. You're just
I guess it comes from not knowing what the Night's Watch is doing north of the wall. That I'm like, well, okay, so now they have safe passage, but to where? Until they find the, you know, the next person that's sacrificing their kids to the White Walkers. I'm like, very clearly the White Walkers are up there. They still exist. There's some stuff that's going to go down, or maybe it won't go down for a really long time, but all this tension is getting to me. I find myself cracking.
Well, I think, like Selena pointed out on the last episode, that I don't know that it's ever explicitly stated that this is what's happening. It was always kind of inferred, and I think that Craster does it because he has to do it. I mean, it's the only way that he can sustain in the area that he is, that he's in, because there are White Walkers that are living around him and clearly would easily kill him and all of his family unless he continued to do what he's doing.
But why make the deal with the White Walkers? I mean, I understand, I get the whole thing about if, you know, if he doesn't give them what the White Walkers want, they're going to kill him, but why would the White Walkers want to make a deal with him? What's in it for them?
Well, I think he just appeases them. I think that's what it is. Yeah, exactly. Like, they know. Yeah, I mean, I still don't know what they use the babies for, but I suppose they know in their whatever capacity for thought that as long as they leave him alone, he'll leave them alone.
Could those be the children of the forest that were mentioned, or is that something completely different? You know, the children that are sacrificed.
I think that's something else.
Sacrifice to the forest.
But I'm not sure.
Okay. I didn't know because, again, my ears perked up. I was like, dragons, okay, we know they exist. Mm. But, and giants, mm-hmm. I don't really care if they exist or not in this world. Children of the forest, I was like, what? Where? You know, I was like, what? Are they?
No, I think children of the forest are something else. Like,
I'm thinking of, like, tree nymphs or something.
It's like the Kokiri is what you're thinking of.
Right. Which, I like that kind of theory, Eric, but I would say that they're probably something different.
As this episode draws to its impending death of a close, as what is the next week's episode called, by the way? Hopefully it has something to do with the Garden of Bones, right?
Garden of Bones. Oh, yeah.
So it has something to do with death. There we go. So my joke makes sense, sort of. Anyway, as we have been doing the past three episodes, which is all that has ever existed of the Game of Bones podcast, we want to leave you guys with our own personal owns of the week. And we would like to know what your owns of the week are. Now, we've had a few people give them to us on Twitter, some in Facebook comments. It really doesn't matter. We'll see it either way. So I guess we can go in a circle. You want to go ahead? We'll go. Just go. Eric, Terrence, Selena, Micah, then myself. Personal owns of the week. Ready.
Okay, my own of the week is Master Luwin, and his little heart to heart with Bran, and the idea that Master Luwin had to practice magic when he was young, and particularly the statement that he said that there maybe used to be more magic than there was in this world than there is, you know, currently. So I like the implications of that.
My own of the week is the sea bitch. We thought she'd be perfect for you. Yara. Yara says it to me.
Oh, yes. Yes.
My own of the week, I'm not going to take the Tyrion one, because I think one of you guys might want that. I am going with Brienne in general, owning Loras and becoming a member of the Rainbow Guard, because I thought that was awesome.
Rainbow Guard.
No, that is really what it's called.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I'm not just saying that.
Sounds like something off of Mario.
No, mine is Catelyn when she's talking to Loras Tyrell, and she says, "My son is fighting a war, not playing at one."
Damn. Damn.
Yeah, there should have been more reaction to that, by the public.
You know. Oh, no. I mean, it's Lady Stark. You know, they're not going to do shit to her. Not them. Some other people will, though.
Zach, what's your own?
Oh, man. I don't even.
You have to go with the Tyrion, like, owning everybody.
Yeah, that was good, but he didn't, nothing huge came out of it yet.
I agree.
Like, nothing, you know, what he was doing, he wasn't only lying down an own on those three people, but he was possibly putting in motion big pieces of this kingdom disliking the Lannister, like, disliking his sister. You know what I mean? Like, he was doing a lot more than just saying, F you three. He was saying, hey, if this shit goes through, you're all going to look really stupid, and I'm just going to laugh about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would say it's an own if that actually happened, but I don't know. I'm going to have to go with the own. As much as I don't want to say it, when homeboy stabs the kid in the throat with a knife, I mean, that was pretty own worthy.
Oh, that's a hardcore.
It is. He was just like, hey, oh, your leg? That sucks. And he just slides it in calmly and pulls it out. And they're all just laughing. He's like, oh, that was fun. And just
that's
walks
what
off.
Said.
And he's just gurgling and, you know, giggling
gurgling
and doing his whole thing.
Grass.
I just thought that was the own of
Yoren got owned too. We didn't really talk about the blade going through the top of his head.
Yeah, but he killed five people before that happened.
That's
so
true.
It like balances it out. You know what I mean?
How about the crossbow comment then?
Oh, that was the own of the week.
They
that was perfect.
To reload,
I've always he gets shot. I've always hated crossbows. He kills the dude. They take forever to reload. That's it. That's mine. Thank you, Micah, for the save. That's the shit. If you guys have one that differs from ours or matches up ours, either way, you know where to send them to us, twitter.com/GameOfOwns or facebook.com/GameOfOwns. We had a few people email us at our staffofowns@GameOfOwns.com email, which still does not yet exist. So for the time being, please just email contact@GameOfOwns because I've been busy and I don't think that a superfluous email is at the top of my to-do list ever. So you guys
superfluous? It was perfect.
Anyway, I can hear the music. That's because it's probably being edited in at this moment very appropriately. And that is it for this week of the Game of Owns podcast, popularly categorized as Game of Owns. Don't forget to comment on iTunes, which also includes you giving a review. And 5 stars would be a very, very kind and kindred spirit sort of thing to do if you would much so desire that. And if you have a friend, have them do it as well. And you guys can go have lunch together and share tuna sandwiches. I am Zach Louie.
I am Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
And I am the Terrence Pinkston.
Whoa.
Don't forget.
My ears.
Don't forget about the children of the forest.
The nymphs.
They've
we
forgotten.
Are the children of the forest.